I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio. And you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast episode. This should be number 176.
Very good. That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. He's also a Hugo winner for the SF Signal website and a Hugo nominee for the SF Signal podcast. You can check out his website, atfmb.com.
Don't go there. There's nothing there.
All right. Well, then just go to follow him on Twitter. Patrick's been sick for weeks, and hopefully by the time this airs, he'll be feeling better. But history would not dictate that. It seems like Patrick is going to be sick for
forever.
The rest of the year.
Yes.
Yeah. But go check out his Twitter handle at ATFMB, which is so easy to remember. my name is John Anilio. I'm a composer and a songwriter. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. And this week, we are glad to be joined by. I just did a pun. Oh my god! By Max Gladstone. I said we're glad to be joined by Max Gladstone. Can you believe that? I can't believe it. Anyway, Max has
it been, works.
Max has been thrown from a horse in Mongolia and nominated for the John W. Campbell Best New Writer Award. Tor Books will publish his third novel, Full Fathom 5, in July 2014. The first two books in his craft sequence, Three Parts Dead and Two Serpents Rise, came out in October 2012 and 2013. You can check out his website, maxgladstone.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at MacGladstone. And Max, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks a lot for having me, John, Patrick.
And John, I got to meet Max at WorldCon, and I just want to say he's a really nice guy.
I think you want to say something else too, Patrick.
No, I don't. He was a really nice guy. He was part of the Campbell folks, and the Campbell group this last year, they were all good, great people, all people that I like and know. And I told Max the same thing I told Chuck, Stina, and Murr. I totally voted for him.
And he looks good in a tiara.
And he looks good in a tiara, yes.
Yes, yes. Does he look good as Chuck, though? I imagine Chuck might be a better tiara
Chuck
wearer.
Chuck was very impressive in the tiara. He did choose one of the more pointy and sparkly tiaras. We ended up getting tiaras sort of as a group all together, so we could get up there on the Campbell Awards panel and be kind of a matching set. And Ben Bova now also has a tiara from that event, too.
I really liked that you guys did that. It was like the super Campbell bonding experience. And I thought that was really, really neat.
It was really cool. I went into WorldCon. It was, you know, my first time at WorldCon. I had never met any of the fellow nominees before, and I was a little scared. You know, what are these people going to be like? Is it going to be this like hyper competitive group where everybody's kind of watching everyone else out of the corner of their eyes for the first person who betrays the slightest weakness? But no, it was a bunch of really amazing people. We got on very well, and I was super happy to get to know everybody.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because that was one of the points in the WorldCon business meeting, is they do want to turn the Campbell Awards into a more survivor-like experience. Put you guys all on like a desert island with manual typewriters and just see what happens.
That would work well. I haven't used a manual in a while, but I think I still have those muscles hiding somewhere. So it's the thing that we all are like on a rubber tire that's around a pole, and we have to like hold on to the pole with one hand and type a story with the other.
Exactly, yeah.
Sounds good. Good training exercise, right? We're getting close to the Harlan Ellison sort of bag of crazy writer tricks.
Well, and that's the thing. You know the guy who's there, and he's like the host, and he does like he puts the fire out? That's going to be Harlan Ellison.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And you're each going to have to pay him $5 every time you mention his name.
Gosh, I better get out of my wallet. I think I owe him like $20 already for this podcast so far.
You have a lot of good ideas, Patrick. You got a lot of fresh ideas that I think really people should listen up. Max, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, you know, you did spend some time in China, and I find that really interesting. So what sent you over there? What was behind that?
Well, a lot of different things. I grew up reading a lot of Chinese mythology. The Journey to the West was one of my favorite books when I was a kid, which is this amazing 100-chapter-long novel, which I do not understand why there aren't more people in the in America who know it, especially among the SFF community. It's this immense quest novel where you have this Chinese monk who's heading to India to get scriptures from the Buddha, like special scriptures that haven't yet been made widely available in China. But his companions are this, you know, 100,000-year-old kung fu master immortal monkey who is imprisoned under a giant mountain for a decent chunk of history by the Buddha because he almost overthrew heaven and became God. And this, you know, immortal pig beast. And so it's this assortment of crazy monsters who are all getting in fights with the demons who are trying to prevent the monk from getting to India. So each, it's kind of like watching an episode of Next Generation, only it's all taking place in like central China in the Tang Dynasty. So, you know, each episode we arrive at some little town, which initially looks like it's totally cool and it's going to be a great place for us to hang out before we get to the next space. But it turns out to be that the local government is working for some demon lord who's in the mountains somewhere who wants to kidnap the monk and devour him because this monk is so holy that if you eat his flesh, you will live forever.
Oh, that'll.
And all of his, yeah, exactly. And all of his disciples need to run back up and try to save him, but they all have various sort of strengths and weaknesses. There's the, you know, super, there's the super gluttonous pig guy who gets everybody into trouble because he's always running off chasing after like a cool meal or a lady or something. There's the monkey, the sort of main character, in my opinion, is really, really clever, but because of this can sort of get totally bored with the whole quest thing and decide that he's going to pop off to the North Pole for a little while to hang out with the, like the pole star. And so it's this great, expansive, funny action adventure quest epic that that I spent a lot of my time when I was a kid reading. And so stuff like that, eventually, you know, I watched too many kung fu movies and said, let's go to China and learn Chinese. And so I was there off and on doing translation work and studying and things like that. And for 2 years, I was teaching in Southern Anhui Province, which is like, if you superimposed and scaled a map of the United States onto a map of mainland China, Southern Anhui Province would be about where like East Tennessee is, kind of. And, you know, it's a more rural area, and where I was sort of towards the south in the mountains. I was teaching at the equivalent of a local magnet school. A bunch of incredibly smart kids who were, for the most part, kids of, like, local farmers and things who were trying to test really well on the national college entrance exam so they could go on and become engineers or whatnot and kind of leave the farm. Amazing country, amazing students. Crazy 2 years. Yeah, and
were you teaching English there?
I was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was something kind of oral English.
Yeah, that was something that I considered doing at one point, and then I didn't. I wasn't as adventurous as you are, but I'm like, that sounds like a cool thing to do for a couple years, and then I never did it. But
I wonder why Jet Li and Jackie Chan have never made that movie.
Stephen Chow has actually made the movie already as part of the reason. There's this duology called A Chinese Odyssey, I think. I forget what the English title is. Two movies in which Stephen Chow is basically playing Monkey, that central character I was talking about, reincarnated. And it's all with the kung fu and physical comedy and slapstick. Stephen Chow actually remade the movie has made another Journey to the West movie, which is coming out in English this year. So very cool.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that. Yeah, that looks actually pretty cool.
I'm excited about it. Chow is kind of the perfect guy for it because he has the right mix, I feel, of like martial arts expertise, but also just plain old physical comedy.
Yeah, isn't it from the same people who did Kung Fu Hustle?
Chow is the guy who produced and starred in that. I don't know if he's starring in the new Monkey movie, but yeah, basically same crowd or a lot of the same people. Anyway.
And I think at Worldcon, Max and I talked about the fact that my friend David did something very similar to what you're talking about, John. He moved to Japan in '99, and he's been there ever since teaching English.
Wow.
Yeah, and he loves it. He doesn't love the pizza, but everything else.
Hard to find good pizza, but there are compensations.
Well, when you order a pizza and they bring you pizza with marshmallows and fish on it.
Wow.
Yeah. No.
That said, I've been hunting up and down the entire United States for a place that makes like wood-fired dumplings to match the stuff that I could get in Xioning County.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Very. I went to California because I read On the Road. That's about as adventurous I got from reading a book. But
California is an adventure, right?
It is when you're from New Jersey.
Disneyland.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're from New Jersey, driving up and down California wasn't so bad. It was okay. All right. Well, let us get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Max, why don't you go first? Why don't you tell us what your pick this week is?
All right. So I have two, actually, and I'll go very quickly. I was looking through the sort of books that are about to come out in the next year, some posts about that have come up on IO9, and I think really if people out there haven't been reading Elizabeth Baer's sort of Mongolian fantasy novels, Shattered Pillars, Range of Ghosts, the third one of them is the completion of the trilogy is coming out this year, and they're totally amazing, and people should absolutely read them. Also, this is the time to get into Hannu Rajaniemi's Quantum Thief trilogy, if people aren't already. He's one of, at least in my opinion, he's one of the best authors of the kind of drop you into the middle of a whole bunch of insane things that are going on at once school of SF world building. And I don't know many people who are working in that sort of full bore vein, and I've loved his first two books, and the only thing that I could say bad about each one of them is that they were part of a series and thus the story wasn't ending. So I'm excited to see what the end of the series is going to bring in the next couple months.
Very cool. Give the author name and the books one more time, just so our readers or our listeners can go check them out.
Oh, sure. So Hannu Rajaniemi is, I think Rajaniemi is spelled R-A-J-A. Oh God, I'm sorry. Let me go look that up.
And you said it's the Quantum Thief trilogy?
Yeah. The Quantum Thief is the first book and the Fractal Prince is the second one. Mm-hmm. And yes, Rajaniemi. I should have just kept going. I knew it. And Elizabeth Baer's sort of pseudo-Mongolian, like Central Asian fantasy trilogy with the pseudo-Tibetan wizard princess, and totally awesome. The first book of that is called The Range of Ghosts. Mm-hmm. And the second book is called The Shattered Pillars, I believe.
Yeah. Those are very, it seems like half the people that I follow on Twitter are wild fans of those books, so of the Elizabeth Baer stuff. And the Quantum Thief, I have that up on my Kindle app. I bought it a while back. I haven't gotten around to reading it yet. I think that was like a Kindle Daily deal, and I'm like, oh, that looks cool. I'll go get that. I just haven't gotten to it yet. But
it's awesome. The first book, especially just coming to discover the world in that sort of wonderful SF, I'm chipping away pieces and, oh, now I understand what that word means, which makes the last three chapters that I read actually make sense, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. I read the whole thing in like 4 or 5 hours, just sitting there desperately flipping pages a couple Comic-Cons ago. It's great.
Cool. Very good. Very good. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
I'm going with Intelligence on CBS Monday nights. This is the latest version of Chuck. The guy gets the computer in his head and is a spy. And it's Sawyer from Lost, if you remember Lost.
Right, sure.
So there was now there's Intelligence, and then before that was Chuck, and then before that was Jake 2.0. And then I'm sure there was like 4 or 5 other versions of computers in a head before that that I'm just not remembering. it's an interesting concept. He's got the chip in his head instead of like the computer downloaded into his brain. The chip lets him do stuff like access computers. He can access satellites. He can do all this kind of stuff. He can sync up with different things. And, it's just interesting. And, of course they've got to give him the evil intelligence person. You know, China has one now, and they have to give him the back mystery, which is, you know, he's trying to find his wife. So, you know, Chuck was trying to find his dad, and then Chuck was trying to find his mom, and now this guy's trying to find his wife, and they're both spies, you know, and so I guess there's a little bit of Spider-Man in there too, because, you know, it's like, oh, your parents were spies. I don't know. But it's kind of interesting. It's the sci-fi.
Enter a clone.
Yeah, it's the sci-fi. Don't even get me started on that, because apparently there's a viral video about the Spider-Man clones. There's a viral video of an ad for the next Spider-Man
Amazing
movie.
Spider-Man, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talking about clone research.
Mm.
And they're like, oh no, are they going to go down that? And then the other thing, the other thing is that Wonder Woman and the Amazons in the next Batman Superman movie, the Wonder Woman and the Amazons might be descendants of Kryptonians who came to Earth.
I saw that. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, I also wanted to tell Max that IO9 pisses me off. I hate their website. Their website is a pain in the ass. I don't like it. I think Max needs to broaden his horizons and go to sfsignal.com. So.
Oh, I go to sfsignal.com all the time.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
My pick this week is going, as I've talked about a lot, I've mentioned the Roku player. That's what I basically use to watch TV. I don't really watch anything or much on cable or live TV, but I do have the Roku player, and I use it to watch Netflix and Amazon Prime videos. And the Roku player was missing for ages was an official YouTube channel. And I'm sure there was lots of legal reasons why they did not have one. Well, they finally have one. YouTube or Google, I guess, and Roku finally came to an agreement, and there is an official YouTube channel. So that's been up for a couple weeks or about a month now, and it's been great having that up there. I don't know if I love the interface of the channel as much. It's a little busy. I think they could probably streamline it a little bit to make it a little easier to use, but I've been using it quite a bit because what I'll do is, and one of the reasons why I wanted one for so long was that, you know, I'll come across just, you know, I use Feedly, which, you know, I used to use Google Reader, and like I have all the different blogs that I subscribe to, and, you know, so I go through, and a lot of times I'll like put stuff out to tweet and all that, and quite often you'll come across a little 5-minute video interview. And well, in the morning when I'm either like sitting at home or I'm at work or whatever, it's like, well, I'm not going to watch this video now. You know, I'm just like checking in for 5 minutes. But so I sort of put them in my watch later feed. And then if whenever I have time, like whether it's later that night or maybe later in the week, like I'll sit and I'll watch a couple of those little videos on my TV, and it's really nice for that alone. And I've also used it to watch a lot of concerts and things because Netflix is not really lacking in terms of the concert videos. So I like having a bunch of those, and I'm sure they're illegal up there. But I think Google just finally decided they were trying to keep it off of Roku and other things, and they just decided, you know what, the more people watching this stuff, the better. So let's just put it in more places. So let's put it on Roku. So if you do have a Roku player, I think you need to have the Roku 3, which is the one that I have, which is the most recent player. I don't think it's available for the other players yet, although I know it's going to be available for them. So if you have a Roku player, go and check out the YouTube channel. So let us move on to our main topic this week. And Patrick, this is, I am on a roll. I actually read Max's book too. This is crazy. This is like 3 weeks in a row where I've read, I've actually read our guest book, which was, I was not doing that so well, but I did read Max's first book, at least, Three Parts Dead, which now the second book has been out for a little while. It's Two Serpents Rise and Full Fathom 5. When is that coming out, Max?
July 2014. That's this year, right? Yes, 2014.
And this is the craft sequence is what it's called, and I really enjoyed the first book, and
their mac and cheese.
Oh, craft is awesome. That's a
craft dinner.
So now someone has to make a mashup of Max's book covers and like a macaroni and cheese box, and you know we'll try to make that go viral. But
sounds good.
Yeah. Well, hey, any mashup is always a good sign. It means you've reached some sort of point in pop culture where people are.
I've pushed the tipping point, and the Photoshop legions have started to descend.
Yeah. I've seen Max's book out there, and I was kind of compelled to read it, not only because I saw a lot of good reviews of it, but I actually met Max's publicist, Artie, at an event in New York, and we were talking, and she was like, oh, I'd love to see if we can get Max on the podcast. And I'm like, sure. And then so I went out and I read the book, and I loved it because, again, kind of like with our last week's guest, Ann Leckie, author of Ancillary Justice. I don't know if that would have been a book that I would have gone out just from the descriptions, but I'm glad I did, because it's Max's book is just, you know, I guess you could throw it in urban fantasy, but it's got a very unique take on that seems to be urban fantasy is kind of weird these days, because I think there was a very stereotypical urban fantasy thing, but now it seems like lots of other stuff is getting thrown into urban fantasy as well. And Max's book is hardly what one would consider like a traditional stereotypical urban fantasy. It takes place in a city. I guess that's where the urban comes from. And otherwise, I don't know if you can consider
it technically urban fantasy.
Yeah. By technically, but I just really love the first, a really unique take of the magic system. And what we were going to talk to Max about is sort of, you know, cause it's almost, the three parts that is almost like a courtroom drama. And there are all of these sort of, you know, things that sort of the parallel between law and magic. And so Max, when you were writing Three Parts Dead, was that your sort of the main thrust behind it, was to sort of make this parallel between law and magic systems in fantasy books?
Yes. And even pushing a little bit further, specifically, I was really interested in the parallels between necromancy and bankruptcy law.
Because that's what you do.
Yeah.
Well, in both cases, you have this situation where you're taking this structure, this living or sort of vaguely living kind of thing that was operating nice and normally, but all of a sudden is in deep trouble. It's dead. It's bleeding out. And so what you need to do is take the thing and you need to surround it by magical wards and protections and then cut it open and start reaching inside, pulling out bunches of like organs and, you know, a few yards of viscera that weren't helping. Then you tie whatever's left back together to make a vaguely functional entity, stitch it all up and hook it up to the lightning generator. Igor cranks it. There's some bolts and then you start screaming and cackling. It lives. And whatever it is, you know, J.P. Morgan or American Airlines or whatnot kind of lurches up and staggers off about its daily life, at least ostensibly the same thing as it was before. At least you'll try to call it the same thing as it was before. And I was thinking about this a lot, especially right when I started to write Three Parts Dead, which was in the very first few weeks of the sort of financial crash back in 2008, right after I'd come back from China. And there was this sort of sense that some immense chaos was happening. Like there was this sort of war that was going on. Immense damage was being dealt to stuff that you couldn't really see or touch or taste. It wasn't like there was a smoking crater where, you know, Lehman Brothers used to be or anything like that. So
there should have been.
Yeah, well, exactly. So I started thinking this is basically spiritual warfare or something like it. So
home on the range.
So yeah, it's basically so then the thought of, well,
I totally
okay,
threw you off, Max. That's hilarious.
That's all good.
I'm sorry. We'll
No, go ahead. Go, Max. Go. Mm-hmm.
All right. No, so I was so I just kept going along that sort of theme. I was thinking, well, okay, so we're having these immense ostensibly immortal, ostensibly entities that have like speech rights and everything that can at the same time die and be reborn. And then, okay, so all of these like bankruptcy attorneys who go around to try to resurrect these things, this is basically a necromancy job. And then that seemed like a really cool fantasy world to start playing around in. So I did. And it kind of exploded out into this story that was getting a lot of aspects of modern life in only sort of through the looking glass into a fantastical world. Whereas I think there's a lot of more traditional fantasy that's taking aspects of sort of super traditional medieval European life and then pushing that through the looking glass. What does that look like when you have magic? What does that look like when you have gods? So it got bigger over time, this thought that right now we're living in a world that's shaped by forces that we as human beings have a really hard time understanding, have a really hard time explaining to ourselves and to the people that that are around us. So it's almost like living in a fantasy, living in a in a world that's kind of being manipulated constantly by spiritual or incomprehensible forces.
Or the Illuminati.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, in the sort of positive view of this, then we're in a fantasy novel. In the negative view of this, we're in a Lovecraft novel.
Nice. Yeah, and going back to I do apologize that it was my son practicing the piano in the other room, and I realized like halfway through hearing it, I'm like, oh, I can mute my mic. How do I do that? And so sorry to throw you off, but
no worries.
So now do you have any experience or background in law where it's something where you really wanted to explore it?
Well, I know a bunch of lawyers, basically, is what it comes down to, and I've spent enough time asking them what it is that they do and to explain their daily lives to me, that, and then having to interpret that by the by rubrics that I'm more familiar with, which is where all of the crazy fantasy analogies start coming out of. So, you know, my wife's mother is a bankruptcy attorney, and I grew up in sort of rural Middle Tennessee, child of high school teachers. And so my sense of bankruptcy was what happens when your company or whatever is bankrupt, is basically you take all of the things that are in it and you chuck it into a giant fire, and then everybody is out of work forever, and that's the end of it. But this notion that you could have, that it would be more valuable to people to have like sort of zombified husk of the company walking around and doing something vaguely like what it used to do, only changed in fundamental ways, was really surprising and weird and intriguing to me.
How come you don't have an accent?
How come I don't have an accent? I moved around a lot when I was a kid. Okay. Get me drunk enough or tired enough and I'll start to sound a little bit more Southern, but I grew up until I was 9 or so in the Northeast and in Ohio, and then moved down to Tennessee.
I went to Kentucky for 2 weeks for a funeral when I was like 18. And when I came back, my friend said, "Why are you talking like that?" And I had totally picked it up and didn't even realize it.
Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is totally not having to do with anything, but I had to bring it up, Patrick. Did you see a couple weeks ago, there was a blog post that was announcing that Kentucky is the first state to have a ninja throwing star range?
No.
Wait, what? Really?
Kentucky has an official ninja throwing star range.
Nice. Score points for the bluegrass state.
Yeah.
And so, and you know what's heard there every day?
What's that?
Hey, y'all, watch this.
Most dangerous words.
Well, one of the things that I think, you know, to get back on top, but I had to mention it because I – but, you know, with magic and with law, I think one of the past guests on the show, T.C. McCarthy, worked, I believe, in the patent office for sort of this biotech. And he's, you know, one of the things that he said, which was one of the reasons, and I think he had left that job eventually because it was kind of crazy, where when you have, especially like when sort of this biotech where whatever you're working on could eventually be worth millions and millions and millions of dollars, and you have all these companies that are sort of vying for control of it, you know, language becomes very powerful, and every yeah. word and every line, you know, could mean something different. And, you know, he hated the job because it was, you know, people arguing. He's like, well, we have people that are trying to patent water. You know, like they're just like, you know, like trying to word it so that, you know, it comes out in their favor. And I think when you're dealing with magic systems in a lot of fantasy novels, that is one of the keys to it is the language and the power of language and getting it right. And mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the things that I got out of your book, is that there's a lot of time spent sort of, you know, going through archives and reading different things and kind of getting in. And so I don't want to say I'm necessarily surprised, but it seems like such a very natural parallel to have this, you know, between law and between magic that, you know, I'm surprised I haven't really seen it before, but it makes perfect sense. And one of the reasons why it was such an enjoyable book for me, at least anyway.
Well, thank you.
Did you ever watch Angel?
Do they do that in Angel too? Do they have like a lawyer character in Angel as well?
Oh, in Angel, the big bad was Wolfram and Hart, the law offices of Wolfram and Hart.
Was he a wolf man?
No, it was actually revealed to be the wolf, the ram, and the hart,
which is okay.
For a stag. Okay. And they were trying to bring about the apocalypse. That was
clever.
As it happens. So, but yeah, so I really enjoyed the book, Max. I'm looking forward to reading book two. I have that up on my Kindle app as well. So once again, so for people, just to sort of wrap it up a little bit. So Max has two books out right now. He has Three Parts Dead, and he has Two Serpents Rise. And Three Parts Dead, I don't know when people will be listening to this, but I believe in terms of the ebook, still pretty heavily discounted up on Amazon, at least anyway. I think that last time I looked at it, I think that's at the $2.99, $3.99, something like that range. Yeah, So if you're an ebook reader, well worth the $3 or $4 to get started on this series. So go and check that out. I recommend it. I really enjoyed it. And book two, I'm looking forward to reading. And book three will be out in the summer. Did you say August, Max?
July, I think. Yeah.
July. Okay. Very good. Cool. And we'll have to have Max back on the show when that one comes out.
And John, if I'm not mistaken, Max is in his second year of eligibility for the Campbell Award.
Oh,
that's true.
So
how does that work with the Campbell?
Because I know people.
It's not a Hugo.
It's not a Hugo.
That's a long-standing joke. It's not a Hugo. Right. What do you mean by how does it work?
Well, because it seems like you can get nominated. So it's debut authors, but it seems like you can be eligible twice. How does that work?
I think there's a 2 year. There's like a. Is it just 2 years straight?
It's 2 years. You're eligible for the two awards following the year in which you're first published.
Okay.
So my first book, my first publication really, was Three Parts Dead, and that was in October of 2012. So I was eligible in 2013, and I am eligible this year in 2014.
Very cool.
And then that's it.
But that's awesome. It's a great honor just to be in that group.
Absolutely. I had so much fun and made a ton of friends just going and hanging out with all of the other Campbell nominees last year. And I'm really looking forward to just being at WorldCon this year. I hope, fingers crossed that I can get nominated again. It would be an awesome honor, as it was last time.
Absolutely.
Where is WorldCon going to be this year anyway?
London.
London. Ooh.
Yeah.
Very cool. So what cons are you going to be going to this year, Max? Do you have a schedule for that?
I do have a schedule for that. I will be at Aresia in Boston next week, actually. And then, let's see, in February, I'll be at BossCon, also in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
And in March, I'll be at Vericon, and this is in Cambridge, the convention that Harvard throws. And Patrick Rothfuss is also going to be there, and a bunch of other cool people.
I have a prediction that Patrick Rothfuss will show up in a t-shirt and blue jeans.
I believe that prediction. I'll let you know, anyway. Seems like the safe money, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. He could show up in like a white tuxedo or a tailcoat, surprise all of us.
Which Rothfuss is it going to be? Because he's got like five different personalities on Twitter, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's like it's like the justices in Anne Leckie's book, right? You have a lot of different clone Rothfusses that are all kind of sharing the same aura consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's,
and then ReaderCon also in sort of New England, and then WorldCon and World Fantasy, and who knows what else right now.
Cool. I've been to ReaderCon before. I'm hoping to get back to that one because I'm in New Jersey, so that's a drivable distance. And I really liked ReaderCon a lot, the one that I was at. I do have to try to get back there. And I'm hoping to go to World Fantasy this year because that is in D.C., I believe, this year. So, again, that's another drivable one. So if I can drive, that always makes it a lot more appealing if I can drive there.
For sure.
It cuts down on the cost a little bit. But very cool. And any other – we didn't even mention. So I know you have that game that you're working on too. So
Right, sure. So the game is Choice of the Deathless. It's a kind of interactive choose-your-own-path type novel. If you remember the Lone Wolf books from the from about 10, 15 years back, it's something like that. You're kind of building a character as you're making choices through the course of the novel. And it's set in the same world as the craft sequence. Your character plays a sort of junior necromancer at an international firm who is trying to, develop her career and make the right political moves and also not get eaten by demons or sacrifice her soul to an unworthy cause and all of that kind of stuff. And, romance and adventure, swashbuckling, deposing gods, lot of good things. And that's available on really any mobile platform at this point, I think. Including,
oh, it's out already. I didn't know it was out.
It came out December 19th, so you can get it on the iOS store and on Android, and I think you can even get it on Amazon on the Kindle store at this point. And
cool.
Yeah, a lot of fun. It was a ton of fun to write. I learned a bunch while I was doing it too, just about outlining and about the need to know where you're going. I'm usually a bit more of a pantser, but that's a lot harder to do with a multiple choice game setup.
Yeah, outlining is hard.
Yeah. Very cool. That's great, Max. Okay, well, and then so check out Max's website, which is just maxgladstone.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at maxgladstone. And for me this week, you can just go and check out my website, johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And Patrick's website is atfmb.com, and you can follow Patrick at ATFMB. And Patrick, what else is going on this week?
Nothing. I'm still, no. I've been so sick, I haven't done any blogging. I haven't been able to write a new Kirkus post. I still got my Planetoid review out there at Kirkus. And as I mentioned last week, I will be at the Pikes Peaks Writers Conference in April. I think it's like the last weekend in April. Gail Carriger is going to be there, Chuck Wendig, Jim Hines, a bunch of folks. And I'm like the official podcaster. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I get to do a lot of recording while I'm there.
Sweet. Sounds good. Awesome. All right, everybody. Well, we will see you next time. Thanks for joining us and have a great week.
Here? It's over. Go home. Go.